Good morning, East Side family. All right, this is Genesis 37, 1 through 11, and it's like, you know, like the little piece above the chapter. These are Joseph's dreams. I'm going to move this away from me a little. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob's family line. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers and sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any of the other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made an ornate robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother bow down and your brothers actually come down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind.
Thank you, Ben. So many years ago, I received a phone call to come to someone's house, and this is not someone that's here, so if your mind's going there, not here. And when I was called to come to their house, I could tell something was up. So I got to his house. He took me into the living room. No, to the dining room. We sat down at the table. He began to cry. I tell a lot of jokes in my sermons. This is not a joke. He began to cry. And he said to me, Eddie, I've really messed up and made some huge mistakes in my marriage. He said this as he was crying. And he said, "You know, I think I equated being a good provider with being a good husband. Automatic makes me a good husband." Poured himself, he told me, into work. So devoted to being a good provider, so devoted to being a good father. But that became his life. And then he also said, "I'm just such a busy father. I'm here, I'm there, going, you know, the activities and busyness of being a good dad. And again, I just equated being a good dad. Well, that makes me automatically a good father, caring for the needs of my children, but I didn't care for my wife." And he kept crying. And he confessed to me, he said, "You know, I'm really not that... I'm not that affectionate. She is. She needed that from me." He went on then to tell me that his wife had recently been unfaithful to him with another man. And if you put on a set of scales what he did compared to what she did, some would say, "Oh, what she did was worse." But his first words to me were not words of anger about what she had done to him. There was no anger. He humbly, and that's a really a driving word. I'm not going to repeat it a lot, but I think humility, if we just get that. He humbly believed that over the years, he had played a role in setting the stage for her vulnerability, and that he shared in the responsibility in the breakdown of their relationship. And so I'm reading through Genesis chapter 37 in this story, and it's just like I'm seeing a parallel. And I'll explain that to you further on, and I think you'll see the connection of the dots. We're in this series in the Old Testament book of Genesis in chapters 37 through 50, and we're looking at this story of the life of Joseph in the last half of Genesis. And here in chapter 37, I think a primary focus that we're going to look at here is just, it speaks of Joseph, and it speaks of Joseph's 11 brothers. And so today we're going to look at, first of all, Joseph, his brothers, and then secondly, we're going to look at Joseph himself. And as the emphasis here is on forgiveness, we're going to discover from their two examples, two first steps, as we're calling it, to forgiveness. We discovered one of the first steps last week as we looked at the family history. Just knowing someone's backstory sets me on the path most often to forgiveness. So we'll take two more steps today. So first of all, let's take a look at Joseph's brothers. Here's the point. From Joseph's brothers, I learned to forgive by facing, not forgetting my hurt. So as we noticed last week, Jacob, who's the father of this large family, he was a piece of work. Israel, he's called here, Jacob. But he played a huge role in just helping to set the stage for what happened here with his favoritism that was shown towards Joseph. And you remember, Jacob grew up in his home with his mom and dad showing him and his brother separately favoritism. So he just brought that baggage into his own family. And so it says here in verse 3 that Joseph loved Jacob. Let's go to the next slide. Israel, that's Jacob, loved Joseph more than any other of his sons. That just like, you feel that. And you know his brothers sense that. And I mean, first of all, you can just have the feeling of him treating Joseph better, but then giving him this coat of many colors is like, that was like as overt favoritism as you can get. This was something of great value to have a coat like this. This would be like the equivalent of me having 13 children and giving one of them only a brand new red sports car, but not the others. So what's that going to do in this home? So I just want to establish something right here at the beginning, establish this point. The Bible is clear, most explicitly clear, if you want to read as a homework assignment in James chapter 2 in the New Testament, favoritism is a sin, and James says, don't make it any less as a sin as adultery or murder. And so by showing favoritism to Joseph, Jacob was sinning against the rest of his children. He was hurting them deeply. But evidently, Joseph's brothers didn't deal with this sin that their father brought against them. They didn't face it. We have no record here that they went to their father and just kind of worked through this hurt and this offense. And this is exactly, I gave this to you in your life groups to talk about last week. In the context of forgiveness, Jesus teaches in Matthew chapter 18 that when you have been sinned against, you go to the one who hurt you and you work it out for resolution. That's really the first step in the process of forgiveness. There is no guarantee that it will work out favorably, that they will respond favorably, but you can walk away from that knowing, I've done my part, I have let this go, I can have peace in my attempts towards forgiveness. And this is important because a huge mistake we make when we've been hurt is that in the name of conflict avoidance, which is cowardice, conflict avoidance, in the name of, well, I just don't want to make things worse, in the name of keeping the peace, when we've been hurt, we say and do nothing, and instead, we say to ourselves, well, I'm just going to forget it. Forget, I'm going to forget it. And we fool ourselves into thinking that's forgiveness. But you see here with Joseph's brothers that this hurt and offense, it stayed inside and it festered. And watch the progression here, and we're going to show you this progression on the slides. It festered and developed into jealousy. And some of the translations of verse 11 will say jealousy, they'll translate as envy. Those are words that are translate this Hebrew word interchangeably. You unpack the definition of those words. That's one of your questions in your life group. But then this eventually grew into hatred for Joseph. In 11 verses, this hatred is mentioned three times. God wants us to see it here. And so you have envy, you have jealousy and hatred, these incredibly toxic attitudes of the heart, and that in turn spilled out in their speech, the way they spoke to him. You see that in verse 4, and then as we're going to see next week, it's going to spill out in their actions towards Joseph. And this is just so typical. Someone hurt them, their father hurt them, and so now in turn they're hurting their brother. The writer in Hebrews describes such feelings. It's a bitter root that gets inside and it grows like cancer eating away at the heart. And the irony of jealousy or the irony of hatred is something you hold towards someone else that destroys you. Nancy DeMoss, and I mentioned her book last week, in her book Choosing Forgiveness, she quotes a phrase that some of us have heard before. She says, holding unforgiveness against someone else is like drinking a poison and expecting someone else to die. Too many of us carry unresolved hurt from the past. Maybe it was from yesterday. Maybe it was from last week. Maybe it was from 10 years ago. Maybe it was from your childhood. And I'm reading this story. I'm just wondering, how would this story have turned out differently if Joseph's brothers had have faced this hurt with their father instead of letting it get inside and grow and fester? So first of all, we learn that forgiveness is not forgetting in the sense of ignoring it, but it starts with facing it. It's not pretending like it's not there. It's acknowledging it. It's confronting it. That takes courage. So that's a look at Joseph's brothers. Now let's look at Joseph. From Joseph, as I look at him at this story, and it really stands out to me here, it's throughout the whole story, through chapter 50, I learn to forgive when I recognize my need for forgiveness. Okay, so I'm a bit fearful of being misunderstood with what I'm getting ready to say. So much so, I've never done this before in all of my years of preaching. I rewrote this sermon four times because I want to get this right. Because I really believe that what is here is so important. It needs to be said to help bring about healing, but if it's misunderstood, it could really hurt. And I don't want you to misunderstand this. So let me just say this first, so you're not going, where is he going? I'm getting ready to make a case here that I believe Joseph shared responsibility in this story in setting the stage for the hurt brought against him by his brothers. I believe he set the stage here. I believe he played a role in it. And while I believe that is true for Joseph, and I believe it's so true for many conflicts and relationships, it's not true for all. And it may not be true for the hurt that was caused against you. You may have done nothing to provoke what happened to you. And this is really true with children who've been hurt by adults. So don't take the blame. Don't take the guilt. But when I'm looking at Joseph, I'm thinking, man, Joseph, what's going on here? You made some mistakes. I struggled with Joseph throughout the whole story, and especially here. And when I was really delighted in all of my studies through all the scholars who were working through Joseph, I thought, okay, I'm not alone here. All of them have the same struggle. And the struggle is, here in chapter 37, verses 1 through 11, did Joseph do, is this right what he's doing? Or was this wrong? And there's mixed opinions on this. So let me just kind of share with you. Let's dig into this. First of all, Joseph, I believe, no doubt was aware of his brother's jealousy and the hatred they had towards him, and he was aware of his father's favoritism. I mean, it was obvious they were speaking to him this way. This is the way they were treating him, and his dad gave him the coat. I mean, that's clear. So I can't help but feel here that Joseph fueled the fire of his father's favoritism when we read in verse 2 that it says he brought to his father a bad report of his brothers. Do you hear what's happening there? Now, there are times when you gotta say what you gotta say about that. But I'm really questioning Joseph's motives here. You see this a lot in homes, in families, kids positioning themselves and competing with one another and vying for position in the home to be the favorite and tattletelling to the parents about the bad things that this brother or this sister has done, so that the parents say, I wish they could be like you. You're just the good kid here. Joseph knew what he was doing. He's not stupid. Read the story. Very smart guy. And then I'm reading on further, and I'm getting to these, as was being read here, I get to these dreams. And so another struggle that I have, like, Joseph, should you have told your brothers these dreams? Now, are they from God or not? Talk about that in your life groups. It's a message from God, you got to tell it. Pretty boy Joseph runs to his brothers. You can see him. He's got that beautiful, shiny coat on that daddy gave him. Guess what, guys? You're never going to believe. Man, last night I had this dream, and we were all sheaves in the field, and all your sheaves were bowing down to me. Like, wow, that's crazy, isn't it? What do you think? And his brothers heard that, and they understood the point of that. It says they hated him even more. Like, we're going to be bowing down to you. And their jealousy just grew. So that didn't go over well. So Joseph has a second dream. Same kind of dream. And you would think Joseph would go, I think this is just for me. But no. He goes, guess what? There's the sun, the moon, the stars. And it's really clear as you look at this that the sun and the moon, that's his mom and dad, and the stars, 11 stars, are the suns. And all of y'all were bowing down to me. And they're just seething even more now. As a matter of fact, Jacob understood the father in this family, what was going on, and he even rebuked Joseph for this. So they're not just loaded with questions here, okay? Here they are. Knowing his father showed him favoritism, he knew that. And knowing how his brothers felt about that, should he have told them this? Well, was he just oblivious and naive? Or did he know what he was doing? Was he flaunting his favored position over his brothers? Was he stirring the pot? Was this kind of like, in your face, y'all going to be all bowing down to me? How would this story be different if Joseph hadn't have behaved this way? And here's what we're going to see as far as how the story is going to be different. God has this incredible way, not only using sinners, but using our sin to work out his good purposes anyway. That's the theme of this story. But how would this story be different? Would he have ended up, as we're going to see next week, in the cistern, sold into slavery, had he not set the stage for it here? Am I seeing here in Joseph pride and arrogance? Is he being braggadocious? Is he lacking in humility? And here's the thing. When we read the third story, and you can read all the rest of it, there is no doubt, as we're going to see as we go further in following Joseph in this story, God's going to put Joseph through some incredibly humbling life situations. But you can't help but wonder if perhaps those humbling experiences served to break down pride and arrogance in Joseph, informing him a heart of humility, which in turn set the stage for his heart to be so incredibly forgiving, which is exactly what happened at the end of this story. So here's more tension, all right? I got all this, but I'm struggling with it. And here's why. And here's why I think so many scholars struggle with this. Next week, we're going to see in the second half of this chapter, we're going to see something horrible. We're going to see Joseph's brothers, they're going to just be despicable. They are going to sin against him. They're going to do what is inexcusable. And it's so inexcusable that it could cause us to excuse what Joseph did here because he's just the victim. And just to reframe what he did all as okay. Or maybe we would think that if you go that direction and say, well, maybe Joseph has some responsibility here, Eddie, then you're minimizing what his brothers did. You're kind of excusing what they did. You're kind of like saying he just got what he deserved. No, that's not true. Okay? Later in the story, this is going to happen to me again. And it may happen to you when we get there. When Joseph reengages with his brothers, which is going to be like 20, 21, 22 years, depends on how you count the years, he's going to reengage with his brothers. And you're going to see Joseph do some things. And part of you, if you're like me, you're going to go, Joseph, that's really not right. What are you doing? But if you're like me, you're also going to be tempted to spin what he did in a positive light. Because what his brothers did to him was so bad, in the second half of this chapter that we'll see next week, that we just feel tempted to give Joseph an excuse just to treat his brothers however he wishes, to give him a free license to behave unkindly with them, to punish them for what they've done. And that's okay. That's what they deserve for what they did. And this is really true. This happens. And no doubt Joseph is an incredible example of integrity and character, and most certainly an example of forgiveness. We're going to see that. But I'm reading this, and I'm asking myself, could it be that he's not perfect? Could it be that like his brothers, he too is broken? And is it that to allow ourselves to consider that Joseph made some mistakes along the way, that he's not fully innocent in this story, it doesn't make right what his brothers did. It doesn't excuse it. It doesn't mean he got what he deserves. But considering Joseph's responsibility can play a role in a step towards forgiveness. So you may disagree with me on this. Regardless of his motives, regardless of his intentions here, regardless of whether or not you agree that Joseph made mistakes in setting the stage for the story or not, I believe there's a valid truth to glean from this. It's very biblical. We, like Joseph, we're all messed up. Whether Joseph played a role in this or not, we are all flawed individuals, fallen, broken individuals. And so I learn to forgive when I get that. I learn to forgive when I recognize my need for forgiveness. So now, let me just go back and repeat again. I don't want to be misunderstood. In some situations, in some conflicts, in some stories, it is very one-sided. One individual has hurt another, and the one that has been hurt played no role in setting the stage for that. And if that's you, don't take blame or guilt for that. And that's just important to hear. But I bring this up because in my many years of life so far, it's been my observation that in relationship conflicts, and especially in marriages, it's two-sided. Too often I see that both played a role in the breakdown of the relationship. But Isn't it just hard? Whatever you have done, you don't even see it. You're so blind to it because what they did was so bad. Isn't that amazing? It's always theirs was worse. And because theirs was worse in your definition of worse, it just kind of blinds you to you and your role. And then not only because theirs was worse, it almost gives you permission to punish them with coldness, indifference, distance, unkindness, or whatever. Which really, that's taking the role of God in the relationship and meeting out justice. I have seen this dynamic of this two-sided conflict play out far too many times, and the conflicts remain unresolved, and marriages end in divorce. But that's not how things ended in the story of the man that I opened with, who called me to come to his house that day. Though his wife did what was completely wrong and inexcusable, he saw himself in the story. He saw his responsibility in the breakdown of their relationship. And this positioned him in his heart to be forgiving to his spouse, and his spouse to be forgiving to him. And years later, their marriage is incredibly strong and healthy. It's a first step to forgiveness. I learn to forgive when I recognize my need for forgiveness. This is really sensitive, isn't it? It's probably hard to hear for some of us. Sure, they hurt me. And whether I played a role or not in causing that hurt, maybe I did, maybe I didn't, but the truth is, I messed up too. How can I be so hypocritical as to hold back forgiveness from them when in truth I am also a broken soul in need of forgiveness? And so as I look from the story of Joseph, I kind of just ask the question, in this, could it be, though I'm deeply hurt, that I've played a role in the breakdown of this relationship? Or even if not, could it be we're both in need of forgiveness? And then as I look at Joseph's brothers, I ask the question, could it be that instead of facing and confronting with courage the hurt caused against you, that you've chosen to forget it? But be honest, it's not forgotten. It's in there, festering inside of you. Maybe you're pretending like it's not. In the form of bitterness, resentment, hatred, and unforgiveness. And it's not just hurting you, but it's seeping out and it's hurting those around you. I learned to forgive by facing, not forgetting, my hurt. I learned to forgive when I recognize my need for forgiveness. They're first steps to forgiveness. And those are steps that take us to the cross of Jesus Christ, where we learn to forgive as we have been forgiven. This is God's word to us today. Let's pray. Father, there was no laughter, there were no jokes told. This is heavy. This is hard. And though we may be dressed so nice on the outside, there's so many of us are carrying hurt on the inside. Oh, Father, we desperately need healing. And that's why you give us these incredible, relevant words of yours. So we come to you now in this time of quiet prayer for healing, for help. And Father, if we've just kind of been suppressing and trying to forget, there's something we need to face, conversations we need to have, blessings we need to return with, please show us. But most of all, as we come to the cross, with our broken, messed up lives, we thank you that you have forgiven us. Draw us close to you. that we might be instruments of your love and forgiveness to others. I'm going to ask that you stand, and we're going to continue in prayer. And if you just need to not sing and quietly pray to God about what His Spirit has said to you this morning, I encourage you to pray that prayer. If you have come this morning with a heavy burden on your heart and you need somebody to pray with you, reach out to someone that you know. Our shepherds are here available to pray with you in this moment. As a matter of fact, our prayer room is open as well. Let's offer this song up to God in prayer.